The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now begin with oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, I suspect by now that all members of this House have seen the urgent ad that was placed on page 4 of the Halifax Herald today addressed to the Premier. The ad clearly makes the case for retroactive legislation to help past victims of abuse, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table the ad for the benefit of the House. I'd like to ask the Premier, what response does he have to this ad?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I also want to congratulate and thank the Minister of Justice for bringing forward a piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, that has improved lives for many Nova Scotians. I, like all Nova Scotians, read the ad today. I listened to the debate in this House. We will take that piece of information that we received today, pile it with the information that we have, and as we go forward, like all pieces of legislation, that if we can strengthen them and improve them for the lives of Nova Scotians, we'll do so.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will say that I appreciate that answer. During debate, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Justice told this House repeatedly that amending the Limitation of Actions Act to allow for retroactive claims is, and I quote, not something that's been done in Canada. The ad makes the very clear point in black and white that, in fact, such retroactive legislation exists in several other provinces, Mr. Speaker, including Newfoundland and Labrador, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, and Ontario. Now that the Premier has reviewed the debate and seen the ad today, will he now confirm that retroactive legislation does exist and could be used to enable victims of past crimes here in Nova Scotia to seek justice?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I again want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Speaker, well, like I said in my previous answer, we'll review all of the information brought forward. Speaker, the Department of Justice has laid out information, given information to the Minister of Justice. We'll review that information they provided. And information was also provided through the form of the ad that the member speaks of. There's been information that's provided by the member from Inverness. All of that information will be looked at. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, if it seemed fit that this piece of legislation should be amended or needs to be amended, like all legislation, it's incumbent on all of us that we continue to improve legislation in this province so it serves Nova Scotians to the best.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that answer. Mr. Speaker, the member for Inverness has brought a new piece of legislation to this House, which actually accomplishes all of the things that the people in the ad wish to see accomplished, and actually what I believe all members of this House wish to see accomplished, which is that the full legal rights that are available be provided to past victims of sexual assault. So I'd like to ask the Premier, basically, why wait? Will he support the legislation that is before this House today to accomplish this worthy goal?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. Mr. Speaker, as I said at the very beginning, we have information from Department of Justice, officials who provided information to the Minister, Mr. Speaker, information that was brought forward in that ad. I know there's a piece of legislation before us by that brought forward. But we will take and do the due diligence required, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that any changes that are made to the piece of legislation will be changed in the best interest of Nova Scotians. And we'll do that, and we'll take the required time that we need to do so. And, Mr. Speaker, we will do that in the fullness of time and to ensure that any changes that are made reflect the reality, Mr. Speaker, across the country.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, last week we learned that the home care wait list in Nova Scotia had grown by 80% in recent months. And now today we've learned that nursing home wait lists in Nova Scotia has ballooned. And it continues to grow, having hit a record high in November. So my question to the Premier is this: how could the Premier have allowed the long-term care wait list to continue to grow at this rate, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. As she would know, Mr. Speaker, these wait lists have fluctuated throughout the year. Every year they've been in existence, Mr. Speaker. We've made it very clear from the very beginning, because we listened to Nova Scotians who have told us they would like their loved ones home as long as possible. We're putting in place requirements to support home care across the province. As a matter of fact, we've got more funding to the budget to deal with the needs of Nova Scotians who want to receive that care at home for as long as possible. We're going to continue to work to improve access to home care, Mr. Speaker, making sure that the long-term beds that are available are used there, and making sure, quite frankly, that the lists that are there, the lists that the member is referring to, are actual lists of people, Mr. Speaker, who require that service today.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, there are 2,575 people on the waiting list for long-term care, and 303 of those are waiting in a hospital bed, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the Premier what he plans to tell those families who have a loved one waiting on a long-term care list who just want their loved one to be placed in a nursing home.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue to do what the Minister of Health has been doing, Mr. Speaker, what is ensuring that we provide a complement of options for Nova Scotia families when it comes to caring for their loved one, Mr. Speaker. There are some Nova Scotians who are in bed in transitional care units across the province who potentially have the possibility of going back home, Mr. Speaker. We want to make sure those supports are there, that we provide those options to Nova Scotians, and we're going to continue to add funding to make sure that that myriad of options suits the needs of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, having people occupy hospital beds places a great deal of pressure on the healthcare system. It means that people who require surgeries can't get into our facilities when people are unable to be discharged in a timely fashion back into their homes or to a long-term care facility. And Mr. Speaker, this government and this minister seem intent on reorganizing who's sitting at the boardroom table and taking their eye off the tough issue of reducing wait times for home care and long-term care. So my question, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier is, will he direct the Health Minister to make reducing wait times for seniors a higher priority than obviously is the case now?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to, on behalf of all members of this government, Mr. Speaker, and indeed all Nova Scotians, thank the Minister of Health for the tremendous work that he's been doing on behalf of all. Mr. Speaker, that member of all members in this House should recognize the tremendous amount of work that provides in the Department of Health But she should also recognize, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister of Health has taken on the challenges that have been put before him, that successive ministers of health that came before him ignored. And that is ensuring, Mr. Speaker, that we streamline the health care system at the administrative level, that we take those savings, we put them back into frontline health care, Mr. Speaker, and that we ensure, Mr. Speaker, that our loved ones receive the care in the appropriate place, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
My question is for the Minister of Justice. Last week in the media, the Minister of Justice said that legislation that removes the limitation of actions for all survivors of sexual violence, and I quote, doesn't exist in any other part of the country. In fact, legislation that abolishes the limitation period for sexual assault claims exists in Ontario, British Columbia, Saskatchewan, and Newfoundland. And I will table that. Mr. Speaker, did the minister misspeak when she told reporters that no legislation in the country that abolishes the limitation period for sexual assault claims, or did she not know about the laws in Ontario, BC, Saskatchewan, and Newfoundland?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I very much want to thank the Honourable Member for that very important question. The statements I made last week were made based on the facts and information that have been provided from my department. New information has come to light now that I've asked my staff to look into, and that we will be looking into that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Minister is now aware that there is legislation in four provinces that abolishes the limitation period for victims. It can be done because it has been done in four other provinces. So, Mr. Speaker, my question, what is preventing the Minister from giving victims in Nova Scotia the same rights as victims in Ontario, BC, Saskatchewan and Newfoundland?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind all members of this House that the new Act that we passed has taken a significant step forward for victims of all sexual assault. These are significant steps that improved the existing Act. Now, new information has come to light. I have asked my staff to look into that. We will explore and examine that information, and if necessary, we will look into making reasonable amendments. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
My question is for the Minister of Community Services. Last week, during the debate, the Minister of Community Services made it crystal clear that she did not support abolishing the limitation period for victims of historical sexual violence. Is the Minister able to table evidence that proves that abolishing the limitation period for victims in Ontario, BC, Saskatchewan, and Newfoundland weakens the cases of victims in those provinces?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you. That's not really a question for my department, but I will answer it. At no point in time did I ever use the word abolish, and I had said that I had asked lawyers in my professional and my personal life. I didn't ask them at the Department of Justice because I'm not the minister. The information that I had was that it would weaken the law.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, this government promised in a speech from the throne to launch a sexual violence strategy in the coming year. Will the Minister of Community Services agree to consult with officials in Ontario, BC, Saskatchewan and Newfoundland as part of the strategy to better understand why abolishing the limitation period for victims in those provinces works but won't work in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
The sexual assault strategy, which will be coming out in April, the first of its kind in the province of Nova Scotia, will not have any bearing on any legalities that happen in a court of law.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll table a Chronicle Herald article from today that states the wait list for long-term care spaces in Nova Scotia continues to grow, despite a statement last week from the Health Minister that it is moving in the opposite direction, end quote, Mr. Speaker. We know now that the Health Minister was incorrect when he stated that long-term care list was decreasing. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, now that we know the true numbers of people on the wait list for long-term care, can the Minister of Health tell us how long, on average, people are waiting once they are on the wait list, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I want to inform the member opposite
and all members of the House is that we can take any 4 or 5 week period and get a snapshot of the wait list. If we look at the past year compared to 2013, in fact, the last 12 months, the first 12 months of our government compared to the previous 12 months, in fact, the number is down by 12%. And in fact, the average for the year is around 2,400 on the wait list. But the reality is, Mr. Speaker, that on that wait list, when one-third of the people in the next to be called category are called, one-third do not take the bed that's available to them. And in a recent random study by the Center of Aging, taking the 2,400-2,500 wait list, they in fact found 48% did not want a nursing home bed on that particular day.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In a Chronicle Herald article last November, the Minister of Health said he was conducting a 100-day review of everything related to continuing care, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. We're now 350 days into that 100-day review. The home care wait list is growing, and it turns out that the long-term care wait list is also growing. We've learned that there's over 303 people on the wait list for long-term care who are waiting in a hospital bed today, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, how many people on the home care wait list are also waiting in hospital while the Minister of Health wonders what he should do next?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm pleased to say the department has been working extremely hard, along with consulting with Nova Scotians, a wonderful advisory group from right across the province, and the refresh of the continuing care strategy that, in fact, we promised would be kicked off in the first 100 days, got underway within that period of time, and this spring we will see that refresh of the continuing care strategy.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services. When the current Limitation of Actions Bill was introduced on October 29th, I was one of those people that came out in support of it, in principle. I did so because I believe the Attorney General, when she had stated in a press release, most importantly, it better protects victims of sexual assault by eliminating time limits on when they can bring a claim forward. Avalon Centre did the same thing. My question to the Minister of Community Services, based on her long-standing relationship with women's resource centres, including Avalon Centre, has she followed up with Jackie Stevens or any other members of Avalon Centre on whether they support amending the Limitation of Actions Act to include past victims of sexual abuse?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
No, I have not followed up with any service provider. I know that the two people that within my staff and within my community that are working diligently on the sexual assault strategy have done that and have been holding consultations throughout the province. But myself personally, I have not.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, as the Minister knows, I've introduced a bill in line with other Canadian provinces that would, in fact, protect the rights of victims, including the victims of predators who have already escaped criminal justice in this province. Mr. Speaker, Jackie Stevens, Executive Director of Avalon Centre, said the legislation would help victims who often hesitate to come forward and often don't meet the one-year deadline to launch a lawsuit. And I will table that. So my question, recognizing that Avalon Centre also expected a full protection of the rights of vulnerable people who often do not report for a significant amount of time, will the Minister support the victims and vote in favour of the change that ensures this?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I have every faith that the Minister of Justice will do the due diligence in the research and will come back with amendments if needed.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, the Minister in a previous answer said that new information has come to light about what legislation might exist in other provinces, or in fact does exist in other provinces, to allow for unlimited action by past victims of sexual assault. I take her at her word, but Mr. Speaker, once again, we have a bill that has come before this House and been passed by the government without adequate research or consultation, in this case, missing whether similar legislation exists in other provinces or not. It seems to be pretty fundamental to how a bill would come together, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask the Minister, in light of her answer, will she table for this House, before this session ends, all the research and memoranda that went to her in preparation for the Limitation of Actions Act.
The Honorable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The department did an exhaustive search. Obviously, I didn't see all the research that was done. I received information. I received advice from my staff. I stand behind this bill, Mr. Speaker. This is a very good piece of legislation for all Nova Scotians. It protects sexual assault victims, and it also protects anyone who is in need of launching a civil lawsuit, no matter what the lawsuit is in this province. Thank you.
I just want to remind the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition that he can't ask a question questioning the advice given by officers of the law to the Crown. So please adjust your comments accordingly. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. But just to be clear, what I'm questioning is how research described as exhaustive could not have included looking at similar legislation on the books in other provinces, Mr. Speaker. So while the department sorts out what it knows and what it doesn't know, what the minister should do is be very proud of and support a bill that's before this House right now, well-researched, backed by the victims themselves who are urging the government to do this, and support the bill for the member of Inverness. So I'd like to ask her, will she get behind the bill that fixes the very problem her department missed?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I really, really do appreciate the question. I stand behind the legislation we passed. It's a very good piece of legislation. I've received new information, and I commit to the House and I commit to all Nova Scotians that we will look and we will explore this information, and if required, we will make changes to the legislation by virtue of amendments. But the legislation that we passed on Friday is a good piece of legislation.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, today we learned that the mediation process laid out by the government in Bill 1 has failed. It was a process, Mr. Speaker, the government knew full well would not succeed. Mr. Speaker, Bill 1 is leaving healthcare workers feeling disrespected and undervalued. So my question for the Premier is this. How is taking away the democratic rights of frontline healthcare workers, leaving them feeling disrespected and demoralized, good for patient care?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't agree with the member opposite that we took away the democratic right, Mr. Speaker, that we brought an essential service piece of legislation that will allow them, Mr. Speaker, to, if they disagree with what's happening at the bargaining table, Mr. Speaker, to go on strike as long as they provide essential service legislation in this province, something that the previous government did not afford paramedics when they took away, Mr. Speaker, their right to strike and forced them back to work. And, Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue. And I can tell you I have been encouraged by the amount of healthcare workers who have come up to me spontaneously and said, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Premier, I appreciate the work your government is doing. You're doing something that is long overdue. It's something that should have been done in the best interest of patients.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, this government has indeed stripped away the democratic rights of frontline healthcare workers. Experienced nurses are telling us they're ready to leave the profession because of Bill 1. Home care wait times have hit historic highs. Hospitals in rural Nova Scotia are losing their voice, Mr. Speaker. So my question for the Premier is this. When will this government admit that the direction it's chosen for health care in our province is negatively impacting patient care?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to assure the Honourable Member that hospitals in rural Nova Scotia haven't told me, Mr. Speaker, that they've lost a voice. And, Mr. Speaker, I've been in them, not only as the Premier of this province, Mr. Speaker, somebody accessing health care services. And, Mr. Speaker, let me tell you, every decision that we make will be focused on frontline health care workers. It will be focused on patients. It won't be focused on those administrative people who sit in the unions across this province.
The Honourable Leader, House Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's like recycling questions all over again. And I know the Minister of Health asked these questions and of a previous government, but we'll try it again. Seniors in Nova Scotia have been patient with this government, but have waited far too long to see action. More than 2,500 seniors are waiting for placement in long-term care facility. Of that number, 303 are seniors waiting in valuable hospital beds. I'll table that. It's been a year since the Chronicle Herald did a piece on the crisis in long-term care, and at that time, when asked about building nursing home beds, the Premier said, there is no question there needs to be, or there has to be, there will have to be more beds. The minister recently said they would not be creating any new spaces. So I'm just wondering if the minister can clear up those contradictory statements and let seniors know exactly what immediate action will be taken to address this situation.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There is no contradiction there. We know that, beds could be filled, but also about 95% of Nova Scotians tell us that they want to remain at home. And we'll be moving, of course, to a stronger home care program over the next several years. And one of the big areas in terms of that wait list is that we must have people on there based on risk and need and not an insurance plan for them eventually getting into a nursing home bed.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And it seems like, you know, in opposition, these questions were being asked by the current government, and they were expecting different answers than what they're getting today. The minister says that he does not feel that the wait list of 2,575 people should come up to any surprise with our given our aging population. What is surprising is the government's failure to address it. Now, the minister mistakenly told reporters that the wait list for long-term care had decreased due to more seniors opting for home care services. Not only was the minister incorrect, but the wait list for home care nearly doubled in 6 months. There altogether are 3,335 seniors waiting for this government to take action. My question is, when will the minister make public his plans to provide care and support for these 3,335 seniors and their families?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We certainly know the number is not the number as put forward by the member opposite. What we do know, Mr. Speaker, is that home care is and care for our seniors is an ongoing challenge. We need to make sure that we do provide it and provide high-quality care in the home. And that's exactly what the continuing care strategy will be addressing. And we know today that if we were to call all people on this list, we may only have about 40%, in fact, who would go into a nursing home.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, in April of this year, the Minister of Community Services announced she was reviewing all discretionary funding distributed to nonprofit organizations. While the review was taking place, she assured members in this House that, and I quote, no direct service organization will receive a cut in funding, and I will table that. We haven't heard that the review is finished, Mr. Speaker, so I was surprised to discover recently that the minister has cut all funding to Camp Reachability, which offers a summer camp experience for children and adults with cognitive and physical disabilities. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Community Services is, why was Camp Reachability's funding suddenly cut with only 60 days' notice?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank Reachability, an organization that we fund in other areas for frontline services, for the work that they've done over the last couple of years. Reachability, actually, the camp itself is a program of the Department of Community Services. And quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, we're not in the business of providing camping experiences for different demographics within Nova Scotia. So I took that $527,000, which was used for 8 weeks, and I've reinvested it into frontline services for youth at risk, which the money was supposed to be, and the rest of the money is going into services for persons with disabilities. It's a much more efficient use of government funds.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, I've heard from parents, and they're devastated that the camp will no longer be available for their children. They are shocked that this government would eliminate one of the few camps in our province that cater to people with disabilities, depriving them of fun, independence, and relationship building that come from attending the camp. So, Mr. Speaker, I will ask the minister why she is really depriving the hundreds of campers who attend Camp Reachability each year from this unique experience.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I'll repeat again that camping and recreational facilities are not a core mandate of the Department of Community Services, and the former member should know that. No, it hasn't. It's been there for 2 years. It was originally for youth at risk, and so that's where the money is going back into frontline services for youth at risk. 65% of the people who went camping at Camp Reachability are already in residential facilities within the province. We're already funding them for the programs that they need to live their full sustainable, full outcomes of being self-sufficient in the community. This is a good decision. It's a good policy decision. And I stand by it.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Municipal Affairs. Mr. Speaker, today I table petitions from both the village of Port Williams and Canning asking for a seat at the table in the Provincial Municipal Fiscal Review. In particular, if adopted, Recommendations 13 and 14 mean some big changes for Nova Scotia's 22 villages, including the possibility of dissolution. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister is, will the Minister please explain why the villages are not represented on the Fiscal Review Committee?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The fiscal review that was initiated under the previous government included senior officials in the UNSM and senior government officials. I can't answer the question as to why villages were not included in the first instance, but what I do want to remind the member, the fiscal review is a consultation document that is out now for feedback from all municipalities and villages, and we look forward to the feedback that they provide up until December the 15th.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia's 22 villages are being left out of discussions which will decide their future, and having just observed Remembrance Day when we honour those who gave their lives for freedom, it begs the question why our villages are being denied their basic democratic rights to have a voice in discussions about their own fate. Will this minister assure Nova Scotia's 22 villages a seat at any future discussions about their future?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank the member opposite for the question. The member is well aware of the ongoing dialogue and discussions to seek feedback from municipalities and villages, and it was in fact that very action that's precipitated the open dialogue and the response that villages are provided. We look forward to the feedback from villages and ultimately review that information following its submission on December the 15th.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne.
Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, on April 2014, controlling agreements in the Atlantic Canada fisheries were supposed to be dismantled by DFO. However, some in the industry are concerned that loopholes exist to allow parts of the controlling agreements to remain in effect. As a result, Mr. Speaker, LFA 34 Fisheries Port Reps and the Canadian Independent Fish Harvesters Association Federation are worried that DFO officials both in Ottawa and Atlantic Canada lack both the capacity and the willingness to completely do away with controlling agreements, and I'll table those letters sent to Minister Gail Shea to that effect. So my question, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture is, can the Minister outline any compensations or correspondence he's had with a federal counterpart regarding the elimination of controlling agreements?
Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to see a copy of those letters, and I'd be pleased to comment on it.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne.
Well, for the business of the House, them letters were sent to the Minister earlier this year. Mr. Speaker, in both letters I just tabled, independent fishers are requesting that DFO establish an auditing process separate from DFO in our region to review all controlling agreements to ensure that they all have been terminated. So my question for the Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture, will the Minister ensure that the lobster fishing industry, that he supports their request for an audit of controlling agreements and that he will continue to endorse the policy of preserving the independence of Nova Scotia inshore fleet.
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, we do support the independence of the local inshore fishing fleet. They're very important to our economy, and we will continue to do so.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much. My question to the Minister of Health once again. The public feedback the government receives should be reflected in legislation that's brought forward to this House. Many organizations, including the Canadian Cancer Society, Doctors Nova Scotia, Smoke Free Nova Scotia, and others, show the government the detrimental impact flavored tobacco held on young people, and the government reneged on it. To ensure this does not happen, they must take advice of the experts. Will the minister ensure that the legislation will reflect the expert advice provided by these individuals?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
I want to thank the member opposite, the former Minister of Health, for the question and comment. We heard over the last week a great deal of commentary and great deal of discussion around this important issue. And over the next number of weeks, we will do some further consulting and make sure that the new legislation in the spring covers the loopholes that obviously have been used for big tobacco to get around in the past. And we want to make sure that our legislation is foolproof in that regard.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we know that the legislation that we will all be voting for in the next few days is flawed and is not acceptable, really, to a lot of those organizations. The government has introduced more than one flawed piece of legislation this session. And Nova Scotians deserve better than the half measures that this government has put forward with certain pieces of the legislation. The government needs to ensure that this does not continue. Will the minister commit to holding real, open, public consultations before reintroducing their follow-up legislation on Bill 60 that he'll have to do in the spring?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we all know, and especially after 10 years in the House, that legislation sometimes is by no means perfect and does have some areas that can be improved upon. And what I'm very pleased with, and I think our party can be proud of, is the e-cigarette and the hookah legislation that will be coming forth this week. And we know that, again, it's another avenue to protect the youth of our province.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health. Nova Scotia has one of the highest incidents of MS in the country. Many Nova Scotians have travelled all over the world seeking CCSVI treatment to give them a better quality of life. And as I have said before in this House on many occasions, time is not on the side of those with MS. So my question to the Minister is, can the Minister of Health provide all Nova Scotians an update on whether or not this government will be going forward with the trials for CCSVI treatments?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite. There's a deep concern about this issue, and it's an area that is still under review by the department. I know that over the past year or two, again, a number of medications have come forward that will improve the lives of a number of MS sufferers.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank the Minister for his answer. In opposition, though, Mr. Speaker, the Liberals were very vocal with their support for this treatment. In fact, the Minister of Health introduced a bill to monitor the progress of those Nova Scotians who left the province seeking treatment. Actually, he introduced it three different times, Mr. Speaker, and I've tabled that document. We have not heard of any plans for this government to support people with MS and for their families while they are waiting for the government to take action. So my question to the minister would be simply this. What plans does this government have to provide support to those living with MS in the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We know that this is an area that is of concern to many Nova Scotians, and it's one that the department is constantly reviewing other medications that can be put on the list and on the formulary and made available to Nova Scotians. In terms of this particular treatment, what I will provide for the member opposite is an update on where we are with this particular procedure.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, we discovered an 80% increase in the number of people waiting to receive home care in Nova Scotia in the last 6 months. In order to fix this, the minister says he wants to allow more for-profit companies to deliver home care to Nova Scotians. The minister says he can save several million dollars by doing this. However, the president of the Nova Scotia Nurses Union is warning this cost-cutting measure could end up hurting the quality of care Nova Scotians receive. So my question to the minister, how will he ensure his for-profit home care delivery model won't result in worse health care for Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I want to convey to the member opposite and all members of the House is that we are very, very pleased with the quality of VON nursing care in Nova Scotia. We know that it's home support that, in fact, needs a number of improvements over the next couple of years to meet what is a tremendous demand. And in order to be able to give that kind of care to our seniors, we know that we have to become much more efficient in delivery while making sure quality remains high.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you. News that the Victorian Order of Nurses, or VON, may have to compete for home care support contracts in areas of the province where wait lists are already ballooning is concerning, Mr. Speaker. The president of the Nova Scotia Nurses Union says that the home care wait list is growing because we don't have enough staff. We don't need to introduce more insecurity to the VON. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is this. Why is the minister choosing to cause uncertainty for home care support workers instead of finding ways to keep and attract them where they're needed most?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased that the member opposite has made that distinction, that it is home support that we are obviously need to take a look at. We have a range of costs across the province that can be anywhere from $15 to $20 an hour. We know that we have to utilize, maximize, and get full value for every dollar invested in home care, and that will be the one guarantee to get the list down over the next number of years.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Municipal Affairs. Section 372 of the Municipal Governance Act says that the board may undertake a study of the form of municipal government in a county if requested by all councils of the municipalities in the county, if requested by all councils. My question for the minister is the minister contemplating any changes to Section 372 of the Act?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's no secret, as I've travelled the province over the last 12 months and engaged 54 municipalities, that we will support municipalities in their endeavour to pursue alternate options of governance. And if that necessitates change to legislation, we will support change to legislation.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Pictou County, some of the municipalities are working on a memorandum of understanding. Four of the six municipalities have signed on to be part of this MOU. Has the minister given any indication to any of these councils in Pictou County that he will sign off on this MOU, even though it doesn't include all of the councils?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm well aware of the MOU that member opposite is referring, and I've met with those four councils, and I've also met with the councils who aren't part of that discussion as we speak. It's important to me, and it's important to those individuals in Pictou County, that our conversation and discussion is open and transparent. There's no secrets in our discussion with the municipalities in Pictou County.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Environment. For several years, the residents of Evansville, an area bordering the Pioneer Coal open pit mine operation in Stellarton, have dealt with particulate matter and coal dust covering their homes and properties. As coal is moved from the pit to the surface and transferred by truck, the environment around the neighbourhood consistently becomes dirty with black soot. My question to the Minister, residents continue to look for assistance with curtailing the dust that falls over their properties. Has the Minister contacted the management of Pioneer Coal to discuss this problem?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. Clearly a concern of his constituents. What I can indicate, Mr. Speaker, is that this particular site, we have also through our department received some complaints and concerns about the operation in coal dust and air quality in and around. I can assure the member opposite that that particular site has about 6 air quality monitoring stations that monitor coal dust and other particles in the air. The organization is responsible to report to our department annually on the air quality, but also to report immediately any incidences of exceedances in their air quality monitoring. In the past year, that hasn't taken place. There have been no exceedances. But due to the concerns raised by members from the members' constituency in and around there, we have done some additional investigation there, Mr. Speaker. We've reviewed the data of the air quality monitoring for the past number of months. We've done an on-site inspection, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to report that there have been no violations of the industrial approval at this point.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As production continues at the Stellarton Strip Mine, residents continue to worry about the air quality in their health. People continue to see dust blowing across their properties from the uncovered piles of rock and crushed coal. Residents in Evansville are now worried that the Department of Environment will give Pioneer Coal the green light to begin blasting an area of hard rock located near the bottom of the pit. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, will the Minister give the House an update when we can expect a decision regarding the request from Pioneer Coal to carry out some blasting?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you again for the member opposite for the question. Clearly, again, an issue at a site of concern for his constituents. Pleased to provide an update. In short, I think the people of the area are aware that the proponent did some consultation and brought forward its intent to pursue an opportunity or an amendment to blast. We asked in the department for them to provide us additional information. That information was submitted to the department, had an opportunity to review it. It wasn't sufficient to make a final decision, so what I have advised the organization, the proponent, recently is that if they wish to pursue blasting for that rock seam, that they will have to file for an environmental assessment.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, the Tankook Ferry has been tied up for repairs now for weeks. The Minister of Transportation has hired a temporary ferry called the Eastern Points. It's not even really a ferry. It's a whaler. But people who rely on the ferry have serious concerns about this arrangements because, for example, today it is not operating, and this means that children on the island aren't able to attend school. With lobster fishing season set to open on Monday, fishers are worried their bait will be stranded on the mainland instead of on the island where they need it. My question for the Minister is, what steps is he taking to correct this situation?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. Look, I want the member to know, I want the people of Tankook to know that we're doing our best to understand the situation and the specifics that are taking place there, Mr. Speaker. My understanding from the department, from any of the residents who have contacted the department directly, there's issues there's concerns about the fuel and the bait and the passenger numbers. These are things that we have to address. There's no excuse. There's no second option here. We've got to get people safely back and forth from the Tankooks to the mainland, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the vessel, the Eastern Points is ready for service. It's been maintained. It is now ready, but it can't
can't travel the channel due to the wind that's happening there. So they have to wait for the wind to subside so the boat can travel. Mr. Speaker, at this point, I want the member to know and the people of Tancook to know we're going to listen and get every piece of information we can. If there's specifics that we can improve on, Mr. Speaker, we're going to do that. We understand the importance of this service, and we're going to keep it there and do whatever we can to get the people happy and safe.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Mr. Speaker, as I expressed to the Minister, the time is critical for the people of Tancook Island right now. Could you imagine traveling in the weather that we had yesterday? And it's important. We have to have something that is operational. The kids attending school, they're missing school. The fishers are starting their season. And the other problem is that residents are concerned that if they have an emergency, that the temporary ship is just not equipped to transport people in wheelchairs and for example. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, when can the people of Little and Big Tancook Island expect a better solution than the one that the Minister has presently put in place?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, once again, I want to assure the member opposite. We haven't heard the complaints and the severe issues about lack of service and the adequacy of the Eastern Points. It just hasn't come to our attention. I mentioned to the member many times, and I want the public to know, if they have specifics that they're really challenged that are affecting their everyday life, I want to know about that, Mr. Speaker. It's our job to correct those. We want the Ernst to be back in the water as soon as possible. This is the vessel that we had that was available, and whatever changes we can make, we're going to do that. For us, this is their safety. This is their mode of transportation from the Tancooks to the mainland. We have to provide that service, Mr. Speaker, and we'll continue to do so to the best of our ability. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. Last week, the Minister had promised that she would provide this House a complete explanation of what led to the mistaken release of a dangerous offender. Now that the police have completed their investigation and have laid criminal charges, will the Minister commit to providing the House with an explanation before the House rises?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. I have committed to the House and to the public that we will have the investigation complete, and I will provide a review by the end of this week. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I know we only have seconds left, and I don't really expect any answer on this, but I'll ask the question anyway. Is there any indication if there was perhaps a process at fault?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm currently awaiting.
Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, would you please call public bills for third reading?
We'll now call public bills for third reading.
Speaker, would you please call Bill number 51, the Motor Vehicle Act?
We'll now call Bill number 51, the Motor Vehicle Act. The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that Bill number 51, the Motor Vehicle Act, be now read a third time and do pass.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I move that Bill number 51 motion be amended by deleting all the words after the word that and substituting the following therefore. Bill number 51, Motor Vehicle Act amended, an act to amend Chapter 293, the revised statute 1989, the Motor Vehicle Act be now read a third time, but that the order be discharged and the bill be recommitted to the committee.